Welcome, everybody. I am Director Alan Shimmy, the Director of Motor Vehicle Enforcement. We are here today. It is Tuesday, January 16th. I know we're at the Utah State Tax Commission, and this is the Motor Vehicle Advisory Board. And we have lots of things on our agenda today because as many of you are new faces, that we're just thankful to have you here. And I'd like to welcome Commissioner John Valentine. He will be conducting the section where he will be swearing in our new officers. We're just thankful to have him here. I guess, should we do introductions? Is that okay? So go ahead. I'll start with Mr. Watson. If you'd introduce yourself, and we'll go from there.
John Watson from John Watson Chevrolet.
Stephen Wade from Stephen Wade Auto Centers in St. George, Utah.
Tony Basso GM, Price, Utah.
Clint Martin, AutoMax down in Utah County.
Wayne Jones, Association Solutions. We represent the used car industry, power sport industry, and also the RV industry.
Adam Jones, also with Association Solutions, representing the same organizations.
John Valentine, Chairman of the Commission.
Now, believe it or not, I do have some experience. I guess the right thing is to say parliamentary procedure. I used to be a student body officer. We would stay at 100 million. But it has been a long time. But I know Commissioner Valentine is very experienced with, as well as Curtis is. And believe it or not, Mr. Jones has probably been doing these meetings before I was even born. I came here almost 18 years ago, and you were already in the board meetings when I came here. So it's been a long time. Thank you for having me all here. I guess we'll just
you
go
have on the record these three names.
Oh, yes, you need one on the record, too.
I'm Larry Ball. I'm the Chief Investigator for Motor Vehicle Enforcement.
Curtis Stoddard, Assistant Director of Motor Vehicle Enforcement.
Mary Morehouse, Office Staff Manager, Motor Vehicle Enforcement.
As stated, this everything we say is on the record today, so that's why we're being formal. So we're called to order. So I will now turn the time over to Commissioner Valentine for swearing the new board members.
Those of the three, and there's two copies of it, and keep on and keep on and keep on. So, however you want to do it, we'll be ready. Start with Stephen Wade. I, Stephen W. Wade.
I, Stephen W. Wade.
Having been appointed to the office of Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board Member.
Having been appointed to the office of Motor Vehicle Advisory Board Member.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
Obey and defend.
Obey and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And I'll discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay.
I'm glad he went first so I can cheat.
I, Anthony J. Basso. Having been appointed to the office of?
Having been appointed to the office of?
Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board Member.
Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board Member.
Very good. Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support.
That I will support.
Obey and defend.
Obey and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And I will discharge the duties of my office.
And I will discharge the duties of my office.
With fidelity.
With fidelity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony, if you'd go ahead and sign those. Well.
Stephen, can I borrow your pen?
You can. It's all broken in.
All good.
Watch your office. Yeah.
Maybe you better leave the pen right there.
Yeah, he's got one.
He's got one.
I came prepared. True used car guy, yeah.
That's right. We're
ready for the sale.
We're ready. That's right. I'm ready.
That's right. That's all right.
Press already four copies.
I, Clint Martin.
I, Clint Martin.
Having been appointed to the office of?
Having been appointed to the office of?
Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division Advisory Board Member.
Motor Vehicle Enforcement Division.
Advisory
Board Member.
Do solemnly swear?
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support?
That I will support.
Obey and defend?
Obey and defend.
The Constitution of the United States?
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state?
And the Constitution of this state.
And I will discharge the duties?
And I will discharge the duties.
Of my office with fidelity?
Of my office with fidelity.
Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good sign as well.
While Clint signing this, the oath of office that was just administered is actually the same oath of office that is used for the governor, for state senators, for the president of the Senate, which I served at for a couple of terms. And so those same oath is found in the statutes if you can.
Well, Commissioner Valentine, thank you for taking care of that for us. We also would like to welcome Craig Bickmore and his son. You guys want to introduce yourselves, who's on record?
Craig Bickmore from the New Car Dealers of Utah. Sorry, we just came from another meeting and just the latest in here.
Jason Bickmore, New Car Dealers of Utah.
Thank you so much for being here. Now I guess we will go into officer elections. Now, I'm not so sure how to do this.
So in order to nominate someone, you need to nominate a chair, a vice chair, a secretary, an assistant secretary. Those are the ones that are listed in statute. So in order to do it, one needs to nominate, then second, and then you'll have a vote to put those people in place. So if you're looking for chair, vice chair, secretary, assistant secretary. There is one member who's not here, which is Chris Mantis. In the past, sometimes that's the person who gets the things that people don't want. However, don't think that way.
I just talked to Chris. He's had a death in the family. Couldn't be here. But he says if you need to serve in a position, that he will serve in a position.
You know, in all honesty, I think back to the board members and the meetings that I've attended over the years, and I know that when Larry Miller was the president, he was honored to be the president, and he actually did an excellent job, and he was all proud to do it. And that those are important positions to be in, and it's like, I think that that's a legacy that the dealers, and the cool thing about it, he always used to defend the small dealers because that's what makes up the industry. So everyone's voice is just as important as anybody else. So I think that he really carried that mantle for a long time and was really proud of that. And I always marveled and envied that he, someone of that stature would care that much about what a used car dealer on the corner would think or what they would want to do to protect the industry. So I think those are that's the direction that we really need to go after. And I think that that's what we already do anyway. So.
Since you just described John Watson, can I nominate John Watson for chair?
Second the nomination.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I can go along with that.
Okay.
Wait just a second.
So then I ask if there's any other nominations, right?
No. So
I ask
take
the
a vote on that.
Second.
All in favor. Say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, gentlemen. I'll try to serve well. I remember when Larry served it, and he was unbelievable and concerned about everyone, no matter the size of their operations.
And one thing just that I might add to the board itself, when legislative issues have come up and we've needed help from the industry side or from motor vehicle enforcement side, usually the legislature looks at the advisory board, because it is appointed by the governor, as something they should listen to. Times are changing, but that you should still feel that that's the case. So
I can second that, having served in the legislature for over a quarter century, when this board and the members of the board up to
talking to us, it made a big difference. Yeah, Craig, yeah, Wayne, they come up and we'd sort of say, oh, they're lobbyists. Well, you guys came up and talked to the constituents. You were just lobbyists. So I'm saying from the perspective of somebody who sat in those seats.
You know, it's interesting, you just made, you just put Gail Miller into the Hall of Fame. And she made the comment, a similar comment, the comment that Larry made when he was put into the Hall of Fame. It was one of the more important awards they received. Here's Larry, I think, about all the awards he received. But when you get a reward from your peers, it's a big deal. Because when all's said and done, this is our livelihood, and we're into this. You know, I've been into this before our hair was...
That's
we had a better color.
so it is
a big thing. It is a big thing because it's where the rubber meets the road for us. Yeah.
Well, I would I'd like to continue the nominations, and I would nominate Stephen as a co-chair.
I'll second the nomination.
And just for clarification, that's Stephen, vice chair.
Vice chair, excuse me.
That sounds better to
and
me.
That's Stephen Wayne for vice chair.
Now you need a vote.
You want me to take over this parliamentary process?
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
Do you accept that?
Sure.
Okay.
And what I would suggest, since you're trying to make a record, when you take votes, that you say who the vote was, okay? I don't say that it was 3-1, but in this case, you say it was unanimous.
Okay. Mary? The vote for the vice chair was unanimous for Mr. Stephen Wayne.
That'll take nominations for secretary.
Okay.
You want to do it, Tony?
Well,
I hate to be the spokesman on this, but Tony, if you'd be willing, I would nominate Tony Basso as the secretary of the board.
Second the nomination.
There's a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed to that? The vote was unanimous for Tony Basso as secretary of the board. I believe we have one other nomination.
That's our secretary.
Okay. Well, we probably ought to do it for the people that are here.
Is there anything for
Clint?
Clint.
Yep.
Clint represents the used car division of this board, and I would nominate Clint as the assistant secretary to the motor vehicle board. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Tony. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The voting is unanimous for the assistant secretary to the board.
I haven't been a customer, but I think it's actually gently previously owned.
That's right. That's right. Previously owned.
Then we like that.
There's been any of his dealerships exactly how they are.
That's exactly how they are.
Our association ends everybody drives in his car.
Well, the good news is now that we have officers, Alan Shinn will not have to conduct any meetings anymore, and I look forward to passing that on to Mr. John Watson. So,
thank you, Alan. I'll get better at it.
You will.
This is a public meeting, and so we'd open this up to, I don't see the public here, but we'd open it up to any public comments or comments by anyone else that wishes to make comments today.
I just to say Craig Goodmore, and I, even though I am a lobbyist, I'm part of the board. It's your. Thank you for your service, all of you. I've been doing this a long time here. I've been doing these meetings a lot, and as good a contingent as we ever had here, what we've got now. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you, Craig. Moving on. It's been some time since we've had a board meeting, and Mary did the very best she could of reconstituting the minutes of the last meeting. Did all of you get a chance of seeing those minutes, or were they only sent to those that were on the board?
They were sent to those on the board and those with the used car and
Maybe you'd like a chance to read those, but The reality is there was very little action or very little that was done at the last meeting, and I don't know if I can bring that motion to approve those minutes as the chair.
Really, usually the chair accepts the motion.
That's
better to have somebody else.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we accept the minutes from the last meeting as so written.
Thank you. Is there a second to that?
I'll second.
Thank you, Tommy. All in favor, could you say aye?
Aye.
We received a motion to accept the minutes of the last board meeting. It was seconded. The motion was given by Cliff, and it was seconded by Tony, and all were in favor of unanimous vote. I think that maybe the first order of business is we need to discuss some dates for meetings during 2018 up until January, and so in the next year. It's been like all board meetings that we typically go to, it's nice to have very helpful people. And we have some dates that have been set aside, and I think all of us would just need to look at these and see if they fit schedules. It's proposed that we have our board meetings in this room, and the next one would be on April 16th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. The following would be on Monday, August 20th at 2 p.m. in this room. The final quarter of the year would be October 15th. That happens to be my birthday, and so I'd kind of expect cake and ice cream if we had it on that day, but that would be at 2 p.m. And then our final for the year would be Tuesday, January 22nd at 2 p.m. 2019.
22nd?
The 22nd. I know this is a long ways out there, and you may not have any opposition to any of these dates at the current time, but do you feel like those dates would suffice for meetings? Stephen, do you want to look at your schedule?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have my schedule with me, and I will do that for the next meeting, but right now, plan on April 16th.
Okay.
Well, is there a process to change the dates if
Mary is
necessary?
Really good about, she will send us out these dates, number one, in your emails, but she also will just make sure that there's no conflict and want to discuss or have you give her items that would need to be on the agenda for that day. And so I think she'll give us plenty of time to verify, and if the time comes up, Mary, you can then maybe make a change and get that as a unanimous process.
Is that okay?
So
there's minimum time for notification. Can't just change it to the next week. There's a 30-day
time.
So it's a public.
Exactly. We'll be out in front of those sufficiently so that if there's any need. And frankly, we've got a couple of months that we can work through this and make sure that we're on task. So if that be the case, could you all approve these dates for the board meetings for the coming year?
I'll make a motion to approve these meeting dates.
Second.
Thank you.
Second the motion.
Stephen has made a motion. Clint has seconded it. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed to that? Vote is unanimous on the upcoming days for meetings.
And just so that the board knows, a majority of the members constitutes a quorum, so a meeting can still be held if one or two can't meet, because a quorum would still be in present. And normally, the reason these dates are is it's quarterly by statute, and the date, the reason it's August instead of July is that one in the past has always been right before the 24th, and so everybody felt that one needed to be changed, so that's why it currently shows up August.
And you usually have had these meetings on a Monday, is that kind of a general?
Third Monday of the month, plus there's all, which is the Martin Luther King every year.
And so, but I see the 22nd is a Tuesday, right?
It, that's the one that follows Martin Luther King.
Mary, could we ask you if you could send these days out to the board members as soon as possible?
I will send them out.
Thank you. Our next item on the agenda is legislative items to be discussed. Gentlemen, I don't know if there's any comments on that, and we would certainly like to hear potentially from anyone with us today of legislative issues that are going to be on the Hill that this board may need to be informed on. Craig?
Mr. Chair, Craig, is there any way you can come to the mic? Because it's sometimes hard to get to minutes when...
This would be a good place to bring up that mechanical thing I talked to you about.
Probably, yeah.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Craig Bickmore, I'm the executive director of the New Car Dealers of Utah. There are a couple of pieces of legislation that, as an industry, that we have, and one is it's proposed. The language isn't out yet. We're still working on that, and it is to address the issue that's been in the legislature the last several years about direct manufacturer selling. And so I would just, we're working on that piece of legislation and some language. The other piece is there is a bill being carried by Representative Dunnigan. It is a bill that Senator Okerlund sponsored last year, and it has to do with recalls of used vehicles that are do not drive, stop, sell as designated by the manufacturer. And so there's a bill file open on that, and we're looking at the language in that one. And the crux of that bill is for a dealer that is franchised that has the manufacturer make a designation that a particular vehicle of that line make, Chevy to Chevy, Ford to Ford, Toyota to Toyota, that the dealer cannot sell, and that vehicle has to stop drive. Well, the bill language was last year is that there is a cost to the dealer because they can no longer merchandise that. Can't sell it, can't wholesale it. They just simply have to park it and pay for storage, pay for interest, and as it's a depreciating asset. So that bill, we're trying to find the right combination of time and percentage that the manufacturers would have to compensate the dealer for that. Those are being done nationally in different states. There's probably 10 states have already done that last year. I know there's more that are doing that. So that's the two issues primarily that we know about and that are there. There could be others. One other issue that came up last week, and actually it's come up this year as well, has to do with safety inspection. And so the safety inspection component is, what do we do now that the safety inspection is no longer required for licensing? If a vehicle was expired in October, November, August, whatever that is, that safety inspection still has to be, my understanding, still has to be done. And yet so there's some confusion there. And then also, we as an industry are going to change the contract of sale to eliminate the piece on the contract of sale that says safety inspection. And so we will take that out. I think that the dealers can simply, and we'll put something out on that for our industry. Wayne maybe has done something similar going to. So that's the other issue. The one other issue part of that is my understanding from the Highway Patrol is that those vehicles still have those safety components as part of the state of Utah law. They're just not being required to be done. So there's some things that will come out from us on that as well.
Stephen Wade, a member of the board, new member of the board. We had a little challenge with this, and as of January 5th, a gentleman came in, and it was still on our computer to charge $17 for the safety inspection, and he requested that it be removed, and the manager went to the desk manager, who wasn't aware of the law change, and we had not taken it off our screens. We we took since take them off our screens, but he wrote on there that required, and then he immediately signed the paper and then said, and then started calling the police and calling the DMV and calling everybody, said we were thieves over the $17. Well, we offered to give the money back to him. I went and met with the man at his home for 2 hours and 20 minutes, and he just called me a thief and a liar and a cheat. He's got some other challenges, and I'd say that as a matter of record. But it's when the left hand does something in the right hand, the challenges. We went back and looked. We spent about $6,000 to date previously doing this. Car had been inspected by law, was required through December. And so we've done those inspections as we were required, and now we were charging for that inspection. But it was not a matter of law, and that was the glitch. And we had told the man, that, which was incorrect on our part, that it was a matter of law, and we were happy to give the $17 back, but he felt like that we were used out to cheat him. And I tried to buy the car back, and he said, no, I've got such a good deal here, no way I'm giving this car back. So it's a dichotomy there that's challenging, and we have a struggle enough trying to do the right thing, and I genuinely believe that dealers want, 99.9 want to do the right thing. How do you stay in business today in this day and age, especially in a community like I'm in, where it's word of mouth and you bump into everybody everywhere you go? And I want no one out there that isn't treated fairly, but I want them to have the perception of being treated fairly, and there's the challenge. So those are some things we have to deal with. And we do need to handle this. I mean, these cars should be inspected for a matter, and we're going to inspect them anyway. But I now have $6,000 that I inspected as a course of business required to do so. I've spent that money. Now am I entitled? I guess I'm not entitled to say it's a matter of law, but I think I'm entitled to recoup that. Those are some things probably for discussion, so that we all play on a level playing field, and we do it in a way that is beneficial, and beneficial to all involved in our industry, and then our customers, most assuredly.
Thank you, Stephen. And Craig, thank you. I'm sure that these aren't the only legislative issues that we will face. Wayne, is there anything from the used cars that you'd like to comment on?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Wayne Jones. I'm the executive director of the Used Car Dealers Association here in Utah, also representing the power sport and RV industry dealers as well. Just a quick follow-up on the safety inspection issue. Our association overwhelmingly wanted to keep safety inspection, and our dealers asked us to present a bill this coming session to reinstate safety inspection on vehicles that were 10 years old or older. Unfortunately, the legislator and legislators that we have worked with said only not only no, but heck no, that they didn't want to address. Of course, he used a different term, but I'll be polite to me. So we still think safety inspection is important. I guess the discussion we have to have as an industry is if we do our own, because I think there needs to be a real education process for consumers to understand safety inspection that was required as a function of registration. Now that we're going, most of the dealers that I have talked to are still going to continue to do a safety inspection program, but it's not tied to registration because they want to make sure that the vehicle is safe for the customer that they're having. Should we charge that fee? I believe that becomes a business decision by each dealership, just as you pass any other service or product that you do to your customer. So I think there's got to be a lot of food for discussion concerning safety inspection as we move forward, because I think the bottom line is we're all interested in safety.
Thank you.
And can I just follow up a couple of other things? The other thing that we're working on, not only for just our RV dealers, but for all dealers that sell motorhomes, because a number of my used car dealers sell motorhomes as well. If you look at the age-based fees that are charged on automobiles, we've done that now and changed that legislatively with automobiles back in 7 years ago, back in the 90s. A few years ago, we added the ATVs and the power sport and the trailers and all those types of things. We're going to be presenting a bill that Senator Bramble will be sponsoring for us to put age-based fees on motorhomes. We have spoken with the tax commission concerning that. I've had numerous meetings with the county assessors. We are probably within this week of having the numbers for what those numbers will be on the age-based fees. We're just working with Kevin Jacobs right now, the Salt Lake County Assessor, for doing that, and we'll be presenting a bill for that to change the concept of, instead of the old fee in lieu, which was very, very confusing for everybody, not understanding the lien date January 1, how come I have to pay the tax when my renewal's in November? And so that was very confusing. The comments I received from the county assessors is most of them, it will save FTE. Most of them are saying 1 to 1.5 because of refunds and all the other things that have to take place. So we are going to be presenting that bill, and I was hoping that you know, the advisory board would support us on that when we get ready to present the numbers. We're hoping to have the numbers by today, but those numbers didn't happen. But we feel that's an important concept for, and there's only two other things that are not under age-based fees. One of them is the specialty equipment, which are all the large trucks, dump trucks, water trucks, cherry pickers, those sorts of things are still under age-based. And the other one is boats over 31 feet. Those would be the houseboats, and they're not covered currently under the vessels because of the impact, economic impact it would have to some of the counties like Grand County that have a number of houseboats that are situs down there. So that is one of the issues that we'll be pushing both for our used car dealers and the others. Just for your information, I think our total for motor vehicle bills right now is approaching 50. I think the last count was 49, if I remember right. Those things range from insurance issues, registration, plate issues. You know, we always have to watch those things, and that doesn't count a lot of the things that apply to workers' comp and some of those other business issues that we're dealing with. Those are just things that are specific to our industry that we're going to have to watch very carefully. Our opinion is for every bill that's passed, we ought to repeal two. I like that part. But we appreciate the support of the industry and the opportunity to work with legislators on these issues. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Wayne. If I might, I think that change in the age-based fees many years ago was one of the great things that took place in the state of Utah. It clarified so many things at the time of purchase and the time of trade, and it took a huge target off the car dealers themselves and gave information so that people could make and understand the decisions that were being made. So I think the education of that is important. Likewise, and I would just comment to both of you executive directors of new and used that go along with the education on safety inspection. It probably ought to be something in one of your meetings that you bring that up, because I still believe that not everyone is totally informed with it, and we ought to stay out of the traps that a consumer can ultimately get us into, and we want to do things that are right and fair for the consumer base. So your educational process would be much appreciated. Alan, anything else on safeties that you could end up?
Well, Curtis prepared a document that's sending out to a lot of dealers and specifically, but in essence, really, to summarize it, it just says that it doesn't really affect our division per se as far as time requirements, because it's just not required anymore. And we've had a lot of feedback on it. Most of it, in all honesty, hasn't been on the positive side. A lot of the industry want a safety inspection to stay. And I was surprised, to be honest with you, how much of a pushback we actually got on that, but that's just the way that it is. There's been no unwind issues. It's not going to affect titling. It affected our division in a different way, because a lot of times we were able to, on a failure to do safety inspection where a temporary permit was issued, we were able to sometimes get a resolution that was beneficial to both parties. Now that kind of really takes that out of our hands. If it's not a safety inspection required now, the vehicle's unsafe, there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, any of your educational process as well would be helpful for all dealers. I think that I could go on record to say that I know that the New Car Dealer Association hated to see that take place. We were up with legislators trying to help them understand. I believe that the facts of the matter are there was a great push on it, and I don't think the public quite understands what has taken place there to this point. But it's a change in operation. It's a change for new and used car dealers, and ultimately, I think that it may be, may have some detrimental effects on the consumer because the car not being really looked at maybe as a show.
We could forward the document to Craig and to Wayne if you guys can disperse it that way. I thought, did I already send it to you? I thought I did.
You very well could have, but a reminder would be great.
Okay.
And a clarification, which I think the biggest misconception of it is, that was only for registration. Doesn't change any of the requirements. So all those requirements are still in place, and that your customer can be cited, or if you sell it personally, which I think a lot of people forget that part, if you sell an unsafe vehicle and someone's in a crash, they can sue you. They can sue you as a dealer, they can sue you personally. That's always a possibility. It doesn't change the fact that those things are required. The only thing it changed was it's not required for registration. Meaning the DMV doesn't need it anymore, doesn't mean that they're not required for that vehicle.
Can I just mention one more thing about that?
Thank you, Chris.
Just really quickly, just for everybody's edification, the two questions that we've had the greatest on are one, for branded vehicles, because they still do require safety inspection first time. They're a salvage certificate or a branded title, they have to be safety inspected before they go back on the road. The other side is commercial vehicles, if they're going to be used for public transportation. So if you're selling a van to a school for public transportation or something similar to that, then you are going to be required to have a safety inspection. So it's not all inclusive for every vehicle a dealer sells. And that's why that education component is really important that we get that out to everybody.
Well, the interesting thing, though, is Curtis, we want to tell you his story. He just had a salvage vehicle inspected. It's not the inspection that most people think that it is.
Well, and hopefully your dealership is different than my experience. My experience, I watched them because I wanted to see, hoping my son was going to drive this vehicle, so I for sure wanted it safe. And so I watched the process. And I was very disappointed that it was not done to what I thought should be done. So even though that was the intent, was to say, hey, we want to make sure from a salvage certificate to being back on the road, it's safe. After my experience, that's not happening and won't happen.
Curtis, being that this is a public meeting, how is this policed? How is it policed when there is a situation? How do we know that we are meeting the standard? We used to have to do that for registration. Now how do we know when the standard's being met?
You're not going to know. And so that since most of you are new members of the board opposed it and actually sent the legislature a letter stating that it was in opposition of the change. The patrol was given money to enforce violations, equipment violations, but it's pretty tough at 70, 80 miles an hour to notice that the tires are not meeting standards or the brake pads are under what they're supposed to be. Or you may witness a cracked windshield, you may witness other things, mud flaps, fender flares, bumpers, other requirements, but the things that truly make the vehicle safe, you're not going to know. And the sad part with their study that they did, when law enforcement investigates an accident, following too close. Well, was it really they were following too close, or the tires couldn't stop them in time?
Or the brakes.
Or the brakes couldn't, or whatever reason. Law enforcement, unless it's a fatal, isn't going to go farther than following too close, those types of violations. So you truly don't know the consequences. Yes, other states that have changed, they couldn't do a correlation. Well, that's why. Because law enforcement does not investigate that.
Can I ask for a clarification?
So, Steve White?
Mm-hmm.
So for a clarification, it is required to do the inspection.
It is not required for
registration. But is it required to sell the vehicle?
No.
So it's not required to sell the vehicle because you don't have to, it's not required for registration. So if it's not required for to sell the vehicle, that means that people can just turn these cars out with no safety inspection.
You're basically selling it as is at that point, which you've always been able to sell as is. The difference was is if you placed a temporary permit on that vehicle, mm-hmm. it had to have passed safety. That's the only change. So once again, you're selling it as is, and if there's a problem and they get a citation, mm-hmm. you know they're coming back to you.
Okay, so that being the case, if a dealer chose to safety inspect every vehicle, it would not be inappropriate then. It would be appropriate if he wanted to charge for that. It's just not a matter of law or part of the registration. So if you charge $15 or $17 and inspected every car from a safety standpoint, and then you charged that when you sold that vehicle, as long as it wasn't a part of force for registration, that would be appropriate.
And as long as it's not being displayed as this is required,
yeah.
we do it. It's just like under
yes.
coding. Like,
how that would have to be handled is it couldn't be any kind of an add-on fee. It would have to be in the cost of the vehicle itself.
Would it?
I believe so.
I'd like a clarification on
that.
It wouldn't be. You could list it as an add-on, but I promise your customers will have issue because they've heard that it's not required, so they're going to say, why is this on
mm-hmm.
my contract?
Perception. Because we value your safety would be the answer, but
yeah.
but the reality is, it would seem to me that if, and just take a hypothetical number, $5,000, if you did a safety inspection and you charge $17, then it may be $5,017 at the sell price, versus trying to hang anything else on, because we're always under attack for any type of hang on or add on fee.
I can tell you that would be a lot more palatable for most customers. However, that would, it'd be just like undercoating. If you do it, they say, well, I don't want to pay the dock fee, I don't want to pay this. You don't have to sell them the vehicle because that's your price. Just don't come out and say it's required because it's not.
Exactly.
Correct.
Chairman, if I could, I've had a discussion.
Sorry, it's really hard to transcribe them.
Mr. Chairman, no, that's okay. I've had a discussion with a representative of the Highway Patrol, and I've just got some other thoughts that I think that's all right. I think they have another statute on public safety. Is that what you're quoting, Curtis?
We actually gave them those because they questioned us on
okay.
what was done. There are some items that you cannot sell aftermarket lighting. There's certain things that there is a statute that says these things cannot be sold. However, it doesn't affect us at all.
Yeah.
All they're going to do is say, yes, you sold it. You could be cited under that statute. It doesn't change the sale, doesn't change anything about it. But yes, there are certain items that you cannot sell.
So it would be, I would say, Mr. Chairman, members of this board, there's more education that as an industry, both Wayne and I will send some stuff out or be part of, because this is an issue that's a big issue. That one of my concerns as an industry person is those private sell-to-sell. Because I don't know how many used cars are sold in the private industry. It used to be 50%. That's a lot of vehicles that wears the safety out of those. That, I agree. I think down the road we'll look back and go, really? So we'll do more, Mr. Chairman. So
thank you, because it's needed. Even many of us are in associations. We know these things, but because we're hearing it all the time, but there's so many around the state of Utah that do not know it or are not aware. So whatever you can get put together in that educational process, I think that would be helpful.
Alan Chevalier, Division. I'm on the highway. I'm on the safety council for the Highway Patrol. And the last conversation I had with Lieutenant Greg Wilmore, he's one of the people over that. The Highway Patrol still has their safety inspection guys that will, in theory, go out to the dealerships, and if you have a lifted truck that's illegal, they could require you to fix it. So that's where some of the questions lie. I don't have the answer for you. There still is a code that requires that a vehicle be safe on it. That includes window tint, that includes lift lights, like Curtis is saying. Isn't that in 109?
So if you'd like, I'll read the two statutes that we're discussing. 416A-1618, which states, sell or use of unapproved lighting equipment or devices prohibited. Except as provided under subsection 2, a person may not use, have for sale, sell, or offer for sale, for use on or as a part of the equipment of a motor vehicle, trailer, semi-trailer, or pole trailer, any headlamp, auxiliary fog lamp, rear lamp, signal lamp, required reflector, or any parts of that equipment which tend to change the original design or performance unless that part or equipment complies with the specifications adopted under section 416A-1601. Section 2, the provisions of subsection 1 do not apply to equipment in actual use prior to July 1st, 1979, or to replacement parts of this equipment. Any person may not use on a motor vehicle, trailer, semi-trailer, or pole trailer any lamps under this section unless the lamp are mounted, adjusted, and aimed in accordance with this part. A violation of this section is an infraction. That was amended in 2015. Then 416A-1619 states, sale of unapproved equipment prohibited, trademark or brand name. A person shall not sell or offer for sale any equipment or part that does not comply with standards adopted under section 416A-1601, including any lamp, reflector, hydraulic brake, fluid, seat belt, safety glass, emergency disabled warning device, studded tire, motorcycle helmet, eye protection device for motorists, or red rear bicycle reflector. Any equipment described under subsection 1 or section 416A-1618 or any package containing the equipment shall bear the manufacturer's trademark or brand name unless it complies with identification requirements of the United States Department of Transportation or other federal agencies. A violation of this section is an infraction. So, there are two sections that say you can't sell these things or a vehicle that has these things.
Non-compliance.
Correct.
It's not things, but non-compliance.
Of those particular items. Yeah.
But is there more code that addresses safety?
There is one also for repair. Under 416A-1600, that's the safety inspection, basically, statutes which say that you can't have a tire exposed.
The cords.
All of those are in there, lighting's in there. So all of those things are still required. However, the safety inspection is not required for the registration of them.
So one issue we may have is the consumers at large may think, well, now I don't need to fix my car. It doesn't matter if my tires are bald. It doesn't matter if I don't have brakes. They will have that impression. So, and that's actually not accurate.
That's correct.
So, I mean, we need to not educate our industry, but also the consumers.
There's also a statute under the DMV law that says if law enforcement says this vehicle is not safe, the DMV can revoke their registration. However, unless somebody tells the DMV that, it's not going to happen.
There's a bill to address that this year at Capitol for requiring law enforcement to report that.
Was that just for emissions? Because I saw that and I thought that's all it was emissions.
As you can all see, there's a lot of interest in the fact that this law's been changed.
Well, like Clint was pointing out, the biggest issue is they're not primary reasons to make a traffic stop. So I can't train my officers to say, oh, look at those tires, they look bald, pull them over. It's the only way you can do it unless it's involved in an accident. And even then, like Curtis said, it's very difficult whether or not they're going to do those things or not. We just don't know.
And some of them are a primary. If you didn't have mud flaps, you could stop them for it. your local law enforcement's not going to do it. Troopers probably will, because they receive funding for it, and that's something that they do. Safety inspection is under the Department of Public Safety. So for the most part, it's not going to happen.
So kind of in essence, we have changed the way to police it, but the law still exists.
Correct.
Is that accurate? Well, that'll be a problem.
It certainly exists for those of us who are trying to sell cars.
Well, it exists in law for the consumers.
Absolutely. But in their mind,
it doesn't.
Their understanding may be different. So there's some education that has to be done throughout, not only to the industry, but to the lay public. So thank you. Any other legislative issues?
I'd like to ask a question. This is Stephen Wade. It's my understanding that in your last meeting, you talked about the tax rate difference between each county. Have you come to any conclusion on that or had any discussion about that? That's certainly a problem. It is a genuine problem that's causing consternation. You get up to a vehicle like a Cadillac Escalade, something like that. I mean, it's near $1,000 difference. And this brings about bad practices. This is not a good thing, and it's not fair.
Stephen, I'll try to answer just a piece of that, and then we'll let Alan take a shot at that as well. Commissioner John Valentine came to a special meeting that was called up to the Capitol about 30 days ago.
And that's on.
And Gage Floor was trying to educate himself in the process, what the problems were. And so some of the dealers around the state, not all were invited, but some were invited that are on the edges of where this tax is maybe most devastating to them. I happen to have been there. John did a yeoman's job in trying to explain. This is a very difficult thing. I brought this up a year and a half ago at this board, and there's so many taxing entities and so difficult to follow this through that it certainly wasn't tabled, but it was left as a discussion item of how it can be potentially made fair, because I don't think the tax division wants to be the one that is making business hard in one community versus another, or giving one business an advantage over another. And that's technically what is taking place right now. But mind you, it wasn't the tax commission that oftentimes voted some of those taxes in, hired the tax base in those particular communities. And so it's a very difficult and complicated situation. One of the things that I would like to see take place, at least, and Alan, you or Curtis could probably tell us, I was always under the assumption that there was a law on the books that said to advertise that you had a tax advantage was against the advertising law. Is that correct?
I'm not aware of this as well.
Not specifically.
Okay.
However, it may be something you want to look at for some legislative change.
It's certainly something that starts the ball rolling a little bit. In my area, some of the dealers that are outside of Weber County, for example, maybe in Morgan County or Box Elder County, it's the first issue. It's advertised places, it's advertised on billboards, it's advertised on the radio, drive 15 miles and save $1,000 because the purchase of that diesel truck will save you that. And we all pay the same. I've been a proponent that it shouldn't be an idea that could be advertised or even used in the sales consulting process as a tool to beat my neighbor down the street. You can come here and save this amount of money. I assumed that it was always in law because we used to talk about that at length, but apparently I think Mr. Bickmore felt like we had it in law because I'd asked him at one of our executive board meetings.
And the advertising, it's a rule, so it actually could be changed fairly easy through a process. So if that's something that the industry wants to do, they can come to the commission and ask for a rule change and include that in the rule, the advertising rule, but currently, I don't believe it says that.
So you could either do a statutory change, or if we felt like we had enough authority under the existing enabling statute, then we could make a rule change. Let me give them a break.
Thank you, John.
This is Chairman John Valentine. You have a couple options in regards to this issue, and we expressed these in the special meeting that we had that the chairman has just spoke of. And that is that you could have a statutory change and define this as being an unfair business practice. It wouldn't be a fraudulent business practice in the sense of it's a statement of truth, but it could be an unfair business practice. The other option is a rule change, which we may or may not have sufficient statutory authority to make that rule change. One of the things that I talked to our executive director about when I left was I said, hey, listen, let me go back and look and see if we think we have enough statutory authority that we could come back to this advisory board and advise you as to whether or not you ought to request it or not. We did make a quick look at it just as I was exiting the meeting. And I'm a little concerned we may not have sufficient statutory authority to grant a rule on unfair business practices that defined this type of advertising practice. But I'm not going to foreclose that out at this point. But it's something that we could do.
Thank you, Commissioner. Tony, Steve, Clint, I don't know if you have anyone else in this meeting, if you have any other thoughts or opinions on that. My own recommendation would be, certainly from the new car side, would be that we take this up as something under an advisement, and we talk about it in our next board meeting to see if that's the sentiment of the board. I don't want to be, it affects me, but I don't want to be the only voice in this if it isn't unanimous with the entire new car Dealers Association and all members thereof. But I think it would be worth our while to at least discuss it and to determine if there is a possibility of legislative change.
Mr. Chairman, do you mind if I ask what the specific numbers are on the difference? So, like, give me an example of what the sales tax rate is.
For an example, from Weber to Morgan County or Weber to Box Elder County, there is about 1.25 basis points in difference in taxation. And do simple math, let's take his Escalade for a moment and put another 1.25% in sales tax in that vicinity on a $100,000 vehicle. It's significant.
So, like, down in Utah County, we charge 6.825%. Are you telling me that it would be approximately 5% or 5? Oh, no, that's the wrong math.
It's 5.85 right there in that vicinity in Morgan and Box Elder. And this is what John, our commissioner, pointed out. If you look at, overlay the entire state of Utah, those taxing amounts are significantly different all over the state. You could be 5 minutes from one community and you could be 20, 30, 40 basis points. It's effectively that way with St. George versus Cedar. It's that way. I'm not sure out in the
Price
area or in Vernal, any of those out in Uinta. But I know that there are significant changes all throughout the state of Utah.
One more follow-up question, if you don't mind. Do you know if that's because of something that's state-mandated or community and city?
Most of it is. The state has a number that is the same, and then added to that are what we call the boutique taxes that citizens within counties have voted in.
And that would be where the difference would lie?
Commuter Rail was one of them in Weber County. Weber County all bonded and voted for an increase to pay for the construction of the front runner.
Is that tax or?
There's,
I mean, from symphony to the zoo, maybe. There's all kinds of things that are involved in this, and some of them are community. They are voted by the community, and with that consequence, most people, they're excited about new infrastructure or new things, don't recognize or real understand what the real effect is.
They just don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, much of that.
And just to add something to that, the statewide rate is 4.7%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to look at all of the various different rates, you can go to our website, and we have, under the sales tax tab, we have that chart that he's going to show you right there. Now, that's a public document. You can go and look at that, and you can see the differentials between the various different taxing entities in the state. And as the chairman correctly identified, those taxing entities differ not because of the state mandate, but because of local voters.
Right.
And they've adopted, like he's indicated, ZAP taxes and recreation taxes and transit taxes and transportation taxes, all of which have to be voted on by the voters.
So if I'm seeing this correctly, the lowest is 5.95 and the highest is somewhere around 7.8%.
Yeah, there's actually a little bit higher than that because of a couple of taxes for some of the rural areas. They have a rural hospital tax, which added an additional amount, and a tourism tax that could add additional amounts. Those are on top of the ones you see in the Wasatch Front.
So to try to solve this problem would be not easy.
Yeah, the difficulty is, as I explained in the meeting, you're now going to be taking on your voters and the city councils and county commissions who are using those funds for infrastructure in your county.
Right.
So that is a problem.
And you'd be trying to ask for an exemption on the biggest single ticket purchase there is.
That is correct. The next largest one would be the furniture items for the homes. And of course, they'd be right on your tail saying, well, if you're going to do it the cars, you need to do it for R.C. Willie.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting.
Again, we put this on the public website so everyone can see it.
We've received numerous issues with this, and we have looked into it, I promise. The underlying question is, and I knew this, so this could be an inappropriate question, but from a business standpoint, I'm just going to ask it. Most of the dealers that we looked at that have been part of the, from Box Elder County and from Morgan, that have sold these, to be quite frank with you, they don't have the inventory that some of the bigger dealers, but lo and behold, when they sell the vehicle, they get it from a dealer-to-dealer trade. So it's like, if you know you're going to give a dealer-to-dealer trade to a dealer that's cutting your own throat, why would you give them the vehicle? A lot of dealers are doing that.
Can I answer that just quickly?
Yeah, the factory's
really
telling you to.
Because priced very similarly. Let's take Box Elder County that's going to compete against Weber County. Box Elder County doesn't come to Weber County to make a trade. They come to Salt Lake County to make a trade where there's more inventory. And it's an easy thing. And we do that dealer to dealer because all of us get in a pinch and need a car from another dealer at times. And that's the right way that you run this business. We try to assist others, and we get a car back that's going to work in our inventory as they take the car out of the inventory. So it's pretty hard just to be specific. Morgan isn't going to call John Watson to take the car off his lot. They're going to call somebody else. The fact is, they'd go to Stephen Wade's, clear the south end of the state versus losing a deal in that application. So once again, this is a very controversial, very difficult scenario. It's been in the state. I used to have a dealership in Morgan, and I remember when those days it was a little cheaper for me to sell a car up there. But that was when we were selling cars at $15,000, $20,000, $10,000, not $75,000 to $100,000. And now it's been complicated with this. Is there a fix? I know the commissioner probably has some ideas and has the depth of understanding, being a legislator for so many years and now a new assignment that is a big task. But it's not an easy task. And honestly, I think something that would simplify it for all of us in this industry would be to put a little teeth in it, at least, to help us. Here's the complicated part. Then how is that policed? Because we try to police advertising, and advertising is very difficult to police unless it's pinpointed out to you specific and you go on those terms.
The advertising part would be relatively simple. It's the negotiation which would be the challenge. When you deal with unfair business practices, those are always a difficulty. The billboards, the radio ads, the print media ads, the social network ads, those will all be easy to track. It's the negotiation where it would be tough. Come up to the microphone.
The thought process, I know, if it was simply just that on the advertising piece, does that have more likelihood to be in the rule as opposed to statutorial business practice? Can you bifurcate those two things, or do they have to kind of go together? That's
in looking at the grant of authority, I think the advertising rule would be easier to say was within the grant of authority than the unfair business practices.
Okay.
The unfair business practice, I'm nervous that we don't have the authority to grant a rule in that area.
So it could be on one, but then the legislator on the other. They could be two separate items.
You could do them both.
Mm.
And then you'd have clear authority for the rule if you wanted to ask it for us to engage in rulemaking.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, once again, this is an issue that has had a long life, and I don't know that there's any answer to it. I think that I would really, once again, propose to both our executive directors from new and used to go back to the associations, get a barometer on what your dealers feel about it, and maybe discuss what they feel the best approach, and then we come back to this board and as board members we approach this and try to present that.
Mr. Chairman, while I still got the mic, if I could, and one additional legislative item. This is one to be watching for. It's one I can't tell you too much about because it's still in the protected phase with the legislators who are considering it. But the legislators are considering something that they started the discussions about last year, dealing with registrations going longer than 1 year, where a person would only have to register for the remaining term of a unexpired registration. And so that one is one that I know that the sponsor is working on. I can't give you the details on it without breaking the protected rules that govern us as we try to deal with legislators. But that's something that I think that if it does come public, you probably want to take a look at and maybe even have a sense of the body as to whether or not you want to take a position on it.
Thank you, John, for the information on that.
Thank you.
It'd be like going back to the age-based fee again, trying to track whether it's been paid for the year or not.
Yep, that's the problem.
Is that correct?
That's exactly the problem.
So, I mean, the answer is no. We wouldn't want to do that.
Well, and I think our issue on that, gentlemen, is to depend on executive directors that are up on the Hill to watch that legislation as it moves and then please inform us on that so that we can keep all entities current. Thank you for the update, John. If there are no further legislative items,
I'm going to ask you to excuse me.
Thank you for being here, for swearing in and your participation.
John, while you're up there, maybe you can get him to change things so you collect the sales tax instead of us in that new bill. If you do such a thing, I'd be happy to.
Then you lose the right to register the cars.
You know what? I'm ready.
Who cares?
Take the responsibility.
Maybe just anecdotally, I made that suggestion at that meeting that I remember being a dealer in Wyoming, and one of the greatest things that I loved about that cold state up there was the fact that we didn't collect any sales tax on the new and used car sales, and the consumer had to go and license, pay for tax, and oh my goodness, what a simplification, what a cash flow complication, all of those things that are in place because of taxation. but it fell upon.
I think I could buy a second home for the taxes I paid for somebody else that I couldn't collect.
Amen. Well, and frankly, I just finished a tax audit. In 30 years, like maybe, well, in the last 42 years, I think I've had three in 42 years. But I must pay a compliment to the tax commission. They were very appropriate, very, they spent their time well. A very smart person came that was very, very, very positive. And like all tax audits, they took a little teeny bit away.
Yeah. So, that's their job.
That's their job. Thank you. Let us turn a few minutes to Mary and talk a little teeny bit about clearing of temp permits.
So we were advised beginning of this month that the DMV has changed their registration fees. They've increased by $1 this year. So because of that, the fee to clear temporary permits when you turn those into our agency has increased as well. So instead of it being $48.75 like it has been in the past, that fee will increase as of January 1st, 2018 to $49.75 for an unexpired temporary permit. If the permit comes in after it's expired, that fee will double to $99.50. That was the only change that's been made.
What's the extra from the safety inspector?
Oh,
Inspector issue. If you have title clerks that have questions for this, we would be more than happy to give them training on how to deal with those issues. Those permits are really frustrating for us because we get zero, we don't get that money. So it's really beneficial for the whole deal for us to work together and just take care of those. A lot of those are out of state sales a lot of times. So there's things that we can do through communications. A lot of it, the meeting with the title clerks that we've done have helped cut those down significantly, and we would like to continue to do that.
Great. Thank you. Alan, would you maybe be so kind to come to our annual legislative meeting and talk a little teeny bit about this, and Craig, you should make sure this gets on the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, last year for the first time, Craig set that up, and we've offered to do that at Wayne's group, and we have had a lot of phone calls to myself and Larry that we will do whatever it takes to help with that.
Once again, I think it's that education process, and I know for the new car, and I know Wayne's the same way, that's the best forum for this, Craig, and if you could help us get that on the agenda. Are there any other board member items that you'd like to present?
Yes, as a new board member, Mary, would you send out, when you send out the proposed dates, would you send out a list of everyone's name and phone number for those of us that are new so that we have those so we can interchange ideas?
I can do that as long as everyone is
Is everyone all right with that? Then we could, I'm certainly available for a phone call anytime, but it's nice when you don't have to stumble to find the number. We can work, I think we work better together that way.
Absolutely. Mary, do you have emails with everyone?
I do have emails.
Okay. As well as their phone. Okay. I think
We're all in agreement.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's a consensus of this board that we certainly have that issue. Okay. Any other items that need to be brought up before the board today?
Could I go on record as saying, Stephen Wade, happy 75th birthday?
Oh,
wow. Huh?
That is not to be public.
It is now.
This is a public meeting.
Yeah. I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
Tony, can I thank you for that? That happened a little teeny bit ago.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think all the public in Utah knew about it.
I think you're right. So.
There is one little last item, and I've been through this a time or two. There is a training process for each one of us so that they don't feel any pain with those of us that sit on this board. Is there a date scheduled for that, or is it next meeting? Is it
Commissioner Cragen is in a hearing, and he was hoping to get done before so that he could come and present that training. But obviously that hasn't happened. And he was a little worried that it might not get resolved. I don't know there are a couple things that I would like to let you guys know about the open meeting and what we're doing with the recordings. One thing that can be done, if there's a legislative item, the board can call an emergency meeting. It just has to be presented in 48 hours before it happens so that it can be publicized. So if there's an issue that the board wants to vote on and take an action, there really is no action items on this agenda. If there is an item to have the board take an action on, it needs to be listed on the agenda, or they can't take action on it in that meeting. So you can call an emergency meeting, then put in that agenda that you need to take action on the board supporting or not supporting legislation that's coming, and make a determination whether you want to go up and present that to whatever legislator. So there is a process for that if needed. Just so don't think that because the next meeting is scheduled for a quarter, you can't meet it if needed. So,
is it possible to do this, Stephen Wade? Is it possible to do these by phone for some of us that are a little further away?
There's actual legislation that says that can be done. So,
okay, some of the boards that I'm on now, state boards, they'll have a meeting like this, and if I can't attend, I can join them by phone.
We may just have to change where we do it, but I think they can do conference in here, so we should be able to do it.
Are you all right with that, Alan?
Yes.
If I'm having trouble getting up here for a meeting, that I do it over the phone.
Unless you're in Cancun.
Well, I've got a home in
Mexico.
That's
not acceptable.
And that's what I'm referring to. But you're welcome to come visit.
Stephen is very good about joining all those support meetings. I think that's important for us to hear, particularly where legislation is starting to rev up and really get some things happening. Yeah. I think that it's important for us, if there were an emergency need, that we would gather ourselves together. Remember, it's a 48-hour prior to the meeting. Anything else?
Real quick, just so you know, I know Director Jorgensen always believed these meetings were very beneficial, because it's our opportunity to hear concerns and issues of the industry. I promise you, we act on it. We definitely act on it, and we always do what we can do. A lot of times, whether it's rules or laws or issues like that, we're kind of bound by them, but it brings up discussion, and those things can be addressed. So we've always appreciated the interaction, and it's just a good opportunity for us to express ourselves and our concerns a lot of times. And these meetings will always be very productive for us.
I might comment on that. This is Stephen Wade. We've tried to work closely with your man in Southern Utah, Brett, and he's done a wonderful job. He's responsive. Yeah, we call him all the time about for clarifications or concerns, and we've never reached out that we haven't felt like there was interest in trying to do what was right and work with us or try to find a solution to things, and we appreciate that very much. That has not always been there, and we feel that it is, and we compliment you in the way things are being managed.
Thank you, Mr. Wade.
Yes, this is Tony Basso, and I would like to reiterate what Stephen said, and we have representation now, you know, in Central Utah. We have a full-time guy that they put on, and he's at the dealership, and, you know, even though you guys have to police, you do it in a very, very fair way, and that's what we like to see, and it's good to see that presence in our area, so thank you. Good hire, too.
Thank you, Tony. Maybe just the final thought. First of all, I appreciate very much the trust you have in me to chair this board. I believe that it's very necessary, and I do believe that it's a complement between us as a business and an entity here within the state. We have always felt the goodness of motor vehicle, and it's been for a long, long time. And we're grateful for the help that you give us and the blessing you are in the state. We feel we have an industry, both new and used, in the state that is phenomenal. Everybody works hard at it, and we're grateful for it. So with that said, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make it again.
Mr. Wade, make the motion. Is there a second to it?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Clint. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.